Welcome to Le Podcast on Emerging Leadership. I'm Alexis Mandeville. And today, I'm honored to have Alison Schultz with us, the co-founder of Reboot.io, an organization that's been instrumental in reshaping the landscape of leadership coaching and organizational development. This year marks a significant milestone for Reboot.io as they celebrate their 10th anniversary, a decade of empowering leaders and teams across various industries. So, without further ado, let's welcome Alison Schultz to the podcast on Emerging Leadership. Hey, Ali, how do you introduce yourself to someone you just met?
Well, I guess I would say, hi, I'm Ali. I'm one of the co-founders of Reboot. How are you?
That's nice. That's direct.
Could
you walk us through the inception of Reboot?
Yeah. So Jerry and I met in 2013, and we began doing the CEO boot camps together. And we did 3 boot camps, including one in Italy, which is not too far from you, before we formed Reboot with our partner, Dan Putt. The boot camps proved that our instincts were right and that we were onto something. And so Reboot really came out of a vision to create a coaching and leadership development platform that would support people not only in better leadership, but also the work that it takes to become a better human.
I think that's the part I'm very impressed with in all your communications with Reboot. There's sometimes when you look at leadership or leadership development, there's that kind of thing that are really technical that seems to forget that behind all those skills, all those things that we learn to do, there's a human being. And that's probably something really important. And I feel that you are really touching it regularly very well. So that's something I really appreciate.
Thank you.
What were some of the initial challenges you faced and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, so this is a great question. We had to build a brand for the company that was bigger than Jerry. So we had to build something that went beyond just Jerry Colonna. And by the end of our first year, we had that, which was pretty cool to see. People were searching for a Reboot. They weren't just searching for Jerry Colonna. And, you know, in the process of building that brand, we took advantage of Jerry's notoriety and his reach and the work that he had been doing in the space for over a decade at that point. And we carefully crafted a brand and a voice that could stand on its own. I would say another thing that we wanted to do, which kind of relates to that, is we wanted to build a company that was built that wasn't built around just one coach, one personality, or one method. We wanted to bring together a team of coaches that were distinct and unique in their experiences and in their styles to better serve our clients. And internally, Jerry kind of refers to this as like wildflowers. And as I have a biology minor going decades back when I was in college. But if you know anything about biodiversity, there's a strength. There's an inherent strength in that. And so it serves our clients better when our coaches are unique so people can come to Reboot and really get fit with a coach just within our herd of coaches, I say lovingly. It's kind of cool because you have a variety of humans that can meet the variety of humans that come to us for help and support. But it's also like, I mean, can you imagine going to a therapist or a coach or that just tries to fit you into their style or their method without really meeting you where you are as a human? It just like, it doesn't match. So we wanted to create something that was really, I don't know, just a unique coaching experience that was in service to, you know, anyone that would come to us for help.
This is very, very interesting. And a quick question about the brand. Does Jerry's book Reboot was already out when you created the brand?
No, we started in 2014. So we started Reboot in 2014. So we were doing this before Jerry's first book came out. And his book came out in 16 or 17, I believe. Maybe it was 2017. Maybe it was 2018. But it was it was further down the line. So we had already had a brand and a larger platform established. And then the book came out and it had a place to be. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's very, very tempting to use Jerry's notoriety and the work he did in the past and say, okay, that's the one method we will propose. And I really like what you're saying now. No, that's not what we are doing. We are not like this. We are uniquely different. You can find a good match for you at the right time for you. I really like that approach. You will celebrate the 10 years anniversary of reboot.io. What are the significant milestones that stand out for you?
Yeah, man, I've got a couple handfuls. I jotted down some things. I think pulling off our first boot camp was a big deal. And then I lost count after 25 boot camps. So that's a significant thing to successfully produce that many events, you know, year after year. And I would say another really big memorable event was getting the Reboot podcast out and shipped. And that happened pretty quick. I remember it was probably September and 3 months of 2014. So it was 3 months since we had started and we had the podcast out. It was really cool to, like, Dan and I had been working on it, and Dan probably more so at that point. But it was cool to have Jerry listen to it for the first time and, you know, to see his reaction. So that was really special. And then after that, we just kept pulling together products and services that were really on our roadmap and that we had wanted to kind of put out in the world, including our peer groups, our circles. We had put together a 360 review process for clients. So a lot of services that were really in support of one-on-one coaching, but it expanded and complemented just the one-on-one coaching work. Internally, we had produced some really fun things too for our clients, mainly because they were like educational, but we had a chapbook of poetry that we would use at events. We had made a branded journal. So it was cool to have kind of some tangible takeaways that we would give, you know, Reboot clients in our work with them. And then, of course, like Jerry's first book, Jerry's second book, which is coming out soon. Tomorrow, actually, it launches. It's, I don't know, in 10 years, that feels like a lot. I mean, on top of what I think is also kind of celebratory for us and maybe for me, because I hold this seat a little bit more than some of my colleagues, because I've just been the one kind of defaulted to being the brand voice. You know, the amount of content that we consistently put out into the world for free, because we know that, you know, not everybody can afford our coaching rates, but everyone should have access to frameworks or ways of thinking or questions for reflection that can help them become a better leader. If they're interested in this work, it's nice to be able to provide such a rich, at this point, library of resources for folks to kind of come to our site and mainline our content and kind of get a taste for what we're about. And then, you know, maybe at some point, you know, if their company sponsors them or budgets are such that it allows for it, they end up working for us. But none of that's like a requirement. We really put a lot of good content out in the world as a service to the entrepreneurial community and the emergent leaders, you know, to use your language, the emergent leaders that are there because they need support. You know, they need to recognize, you know, what are the practical skills that I need? What's the radical self-inquiry piece that I need? Like, what's the inner reflection piece that I need to bring into this leadership space? And then what are the shared experiences, right? And so how can they then find their people or their communities or their support or places for support, you know, in order to give them greater resiliency and enhance their leadership?
Yeah, that's beautiful. And among all the resources you're exposing to the world, I really like the journaling prompt.
Yeah,
that's so simple and that's so helpful to help people start with journaling. And usually some people told me, but I don't know what to write. I've said, I'll write what's on your mind. And so they said, no, I'm stuck. I cannot write anything. I said, okay, that's a good one. Let's start with some prompts. And when I discovered your journaling prompt, I said, oh yeah, that's really cool. Really like that.
I'm glad you think so. I think so as well. It's a really beautiful practice to, I mean, journaling takes work, you know, and it's personal for everybody. There's no right way or wrong way to do it. It just has to support you. You know, that's why people do it. And so Margaret, who's my like partner in content creation, and she's the brilliant editor to our podcast. We sat down and I was like, we have enough journaling prompts from all the content we've put out in the world and from all the events that we have done where we could just do an email course, even though it's zero cost, but like sign up, get a daily email in your inbox. You know, the questions that we pulled together are very rebooty, and they're very applicable to anyone in leadership, like anyone in leadership or management, or even people who don't think of themselves as CEOs or founders or anything. They can be really handy just in terms of helping someone to establish a journal practice or giving them like that external prompt so that they can sit down and do some self-reflection. So it's such an important piece, I think, of being a leader. I'm really delighted that we released that this year.
Over those 10 years, how has your role evolved within your company?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, I feel like I've been around, done a lot. I started in ops primarily. So I was like, you know, making sure that the trains ran on time and taking care of a lot of the internal structure, really the business structure of what are we doing, and really leading the marketing and content efforts. And I mean, we've been very lucky as a company that because of kind of like Jerry's notoriety and whatnot, the PR efforts and the traditional marketing efforts, we really didn't need so much of, but you know, we could be really creative, I don't know, kind of like specific with the content we put out. And so I really leaned in there. And after 5 years, we came to a moment in the company where we were no longer a loose consultancy of coaches, which is kind of what we began as we tried the experiment of, you know, what is this company and what does it need to be? And we began employing our coaches. And so that was just a slight shift in the business model, not too bad. But it was at that point that I handed over the operational reins to just a small ops team within the org. And I just stepped into coaching full time. So it was a big shift, but it was also welcome. So
yeah, that's a big one. But yeah, that's probably very satisfying to have built a team that can run out on its own and enables you to do something that has a different kind of impact. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what does emerging leadership mean to you, and how does it align with the mission of Reboot.io?
Yeah, this was another really great question. I mean, we believe that better humans make better leaders, and better leaders create more humane organizations. And we love working with emerging leaders because we can instill in them during those emergent years, like the soft skills that are so important. And we can also stress the importance of doing the radical self-inquiry work alongside the practical skills, right? But it's a way to really support what's emerging in each individual as they're stepping into their leadership. You know, anyone who takes a leadership role that has not done that before is going to run up against a host of issues, including self-doubt, imposter syndrome, all these things that really stem from who am I and what am I bringing into this role. But it also kind of stems from, I've never done this before, and what do I need to know to do the job? I kind of feel like, I mean, I kind of hinted or spoke to our formula before, but kind of the formula or the bet that we take at Reboot is that practical skills plus radical self-inquiry plus shared experiences equal greater resiliency and enhanced leadership. Or it might be enhanced resiliency and greater leadership, whatever. But it really fits that emerging leadership sensibility where, you know, I don't know, when I think about emerging leaders, there's something emerging. It's emerging in you. It's emerging from a need in the world. It's emerging from a need in the organization. And how are you going to meet that? How are you going to, A, listen to what's showing up? Listen for what's showing up. How can you be attuned to that? And how can you meet that need or meet what's emerging and be agile about it?
I love it. Thanks for sharing. Can you share with us an example of a time when your leadership skills were put to the test?
Yeah. When I operate, I'm really, I don't know that tactical is the word, but transactional. Like when I go in to get shit done, I go in to just get shit done. Like that's, I assume like that's why we're here. So I think it took a while for me to really pause or trust that holding space for everything else that's in the room was actually going to get things done more smoothly and potentially more quickly, right? Because you're not just meeting with people who are always ready to go, tracking the same agenda items that you are, seeing everything the way that you want to see them. And so, yeah, I would say learning to just kind of sit back, not drive so much with the get shit done mentality, but to really create enough space for the humans in the room and kind of meet and be able to meet that humanity, right? Like personal check-ins. How are we doing? How are we feeling about these things? And then moving into what may be the agenda items, but it's more like realizing what are the other issues that aren't maybe so tactical or get shit done oriented that are also in the room that need to be unpacked and talked about.
Mm.
And I think for early leaders and I don't know, a lot of clients that I work with too, it's like learning that shift can be really impactful. And it's hard, I think, during early startup days when everybody's kind of doing everything and there's an urgency to just like get everything done as fast as possible. Because it feels like there is no time to pause or to take things slow or to ask big questions. I guess my invitation is, and my learning was to create the space for that way of being with the to-do list. It's more powerful in the long run.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that because I believe it will help a lot of people to think and reflect about it. I have the tendency also to look at the time we have allocated to do something and to say, okay, I don't want to waste the time of anybody, so let's get to it immediately. That's kind of that urge that is there, and it's yeah. hard to pause. So it's very, very helpful to say, yeah, but make enough space for the human being in the room. And that's, yeah, very powerful. I love it. If we look at a startup environment, what are some key qualities you look for when you're building a team?
Yeah. Key qualities. I think there's a lot of power in finding people that are good people. Like you just really want good people. But I mean, as far as qualities, a willingness to dive in and face problems, that's key. And I think a willingness to be a little bit obsessed and dedicated also goes a long way at first, especially when teams are small and new and there's a lot of exciting stuff happening. I mean, I say that in the sense that the obsession or the dedication can help people, can really help the focus and the small team cohesion a little bit. Yet that certainly doesn't scale. I mean, it can, but it needs to be named, it needs to be checked in on, and it needs to be maintained in a healthy way. But you want people that are engaged in the work. Like they want to be there. They're eager to solve these problems. They're eager to show up every day and solve these problems. And they get a little bit of aliveness out of it. I mean, you want people that really want to be there because you're going to get so much more out of not just the team. There's no sense. I mean, it's just hard to work with people who their heart isn't in it. I don't know. I think someone who's willing to kind of put their heart into it a little bit is makes things kind of fun at the beginning. You also need a balance of like contextual thinking and execution, especially at first, because at first you have I mean, I'm thinking of like startup teams of like maybe 5 to 10 people or 5 to 15 people. But at that stage, everybody's kind of doing everything. And it's a little bit like, you know, a kindergarten soccer team where everybody's on the field and not everybody has a defined role, but you know, you're on the same team and you're kind of playing certain parts of the field, but you're also getting coffee and taking out the trash and doing all those other things. So it's such a mixed bag of an experience early on. And then of course, as things grow and roles scale and the company scales and roles get defined, then there's more clear parameters and more clarity and more expectation around what your key role on the team or on the field is. You know, I think you need people who are able to kind of going along the execution line. It's really great to have people that can execute, but you also need people who can create something from nothing, you know, because in a lot of startup spaces, there's, I mean, that's art really, is to be, to create something from nothing. Right. But so many of the problems that get funded and companies are built around, like they didn't exist, you know, before funding. It was like, I have this idea, let's do this. And so you need someone who can really see the whole picture of where this is going and also be able to know, okay, this is my role execution wise in the org, and this is how I contribute to this. And a lot of this is kind of set too, I think, with leadership parameters, you know, like your leader's gonna, a good leader will help, you know, the team see these things. But honestly, I'd say when it comes to hiring people, there is no sociopath filter. However, I know after working with a lot of clients that sociopaths exist. You have to trust your gut when hiring, and you have to be quick to really get toxic people, I think, off the team. But one of the ways to really test for this, it's not foolproof because there are some really charming and toxic people that can just be in the world and then wreak havoc in your organization. We always say, you know, the Sunday test here at Reboot. And that is, would you want to hang out with this person by choice on a Sunday? Like it's a non-work day. You don't have to be in their presence. And yet you would choose to hang out with them on some relaxing non-work activity. If someone passes the Sunday test, that's a pretty substantial thing. And you can tell a lot too about people and how they make you feel by meeting in person. You know, so like when you're hiring, really pay attention. How does this person make me feel? Are there any red flags? Are there any like suspicions or feelings that come up while I'm with this person that I either want to get clarity around and lean in and ask them about, and or does it remind me of anything else in my life that was a red flag for another relationship that may have headed south? Those are just, they're signals to pay attention to, I would say. There's a lot of magic at the start of startup. And then, you know, as teams scale, I think it's key to also know that not everybody scales with the organization. Mm-hmm. And so turnover is like natural. Turnover in many ways can be celebrated. Like, oh, we have reached this point in our organization where we need to bring in like a CFO, not just a director of finance, or we need to bring in a really like a main leader, not just someone who's grown up and kind of fulfilled some territory in the organization, like with marketing or some part of the org. And so, I mean, that can be really hard, you know, especially as teams grow, because you get attached to people. But there's ways to also build it into culture and say, you know, we're bringing you in. We know this might be a short-term thing, but we want this to be the best place that you've worked. And, you know, we're going to celebrate what's here and, you know, whatever tenure anyone does have. So I guess a lot of this is like, there are qualities that you want in your team, right? But not all those qualities, not all the people will necessarily scale with your org.
Yeah.
And what are the qualities too, I guess, as part of what I'm responding to here is, what are the qualities you can bring to like your hiring process and your culture and tending to those parts, which are equally as important.
I really like your answer and setting the right expectations also for people. And I like what you say, That's a good balance between for people who can grow with the team or with the company, that celebrate what they brought to the team. And there's people who don't want to go in the next stage. They prefer really the infancy in the incubation mode, and they don't want to go to the next stage. That's not maybe they could, but they don't want.
Right.
So that's okay, and that's great to have found those people for that period of time, however long that was. How do you approach your own personal and professional development?
This is a great question. It's an ongoing process, really, of kind of discovery from, you know, within me, but also a commitment to being curious about what's showing up for me in my work. I believe we need guides in this life. We can't do this alone. I've got a great body worker. I've got a great therapist. I have a small herd of beautiful horses where I get to go and decompress. I have great colleagues that I get to share my work with, and they share their work with me. So there's like this cross-pollination that happens. And I have a very loving and wonderful partner with whom I'm lucky to share both life and work. So that's a big part of, I think, what supports me in my work. I live a pretty cloistered life on purpose so that I can kind of hear my own voice clearly, stay attuned to what's emerging within me and within the world. And, you know, that quiet life really ensures that I have the resources that I need to do the work that I do with my clients. So, yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Are there any books, mentors, experiences that have profoundly impacted your style, your leadership style, or your way of doing your work?
Yeah, there's probably too many books to mention, but I'll say that it's probably been informed by three things that are really important to me, and that is deep ecology, you know, this belief that the world, in order to really amend the climate crisis or the ecological disaster that is kind of impending in the world, we really need to tune into a shift in consciousness, which helps people like awaken into self-actualization versus less woke, less aware way of being in the world, right? So I'm a deep ecologist at heart. It's kind of cloaked, I would say, in all of my work at Reboot. I don't speak about it that directly most of the time, but I mean, for me, it's right there every day. I'd say another practice that's really informed the work that I do is art. I mean, I've been an artist for my whole life. I'm not formally trained, nor do I think that you need formal training to really be an artist. Same with leadership in many respects. But there's something about, for me, the practice of art where you're alone with yourself and this idea, or you in a blank page or a blank canvas. And it's like, what am I going to bring to this? And it's much less about what am I going to be creating, and it's more about how am I with that creative force that's arising in me, and how do I trust my intuition and my instincts, and what then comes out of that, and how do I work with, you know, what's in front of me. I think there's, I don't know, something about beauty and truth in that whole process, and it's really personal and it's really intimate, but I think it's key to leadership. And then hands down, I would say horses have definitely impacted my beliefs about leadership and probably my leadership style. And there's so much there for me in the horse aspect. Like, I can't even talk about it. I just start crying. But there's something about learning to be in relationship with another being that is not a power over relationship, really. It's power with. That goes a long way into anybody's, you know, leadership or management roles. But for me and my small herd of beautiful horses, it's, you know, they don't put up with anything really other than the best me, the most authentic, me that I bring forward. And so for me, every moment spent in the barn is, I'm not going to knock my therapist because I love her. She's fantastic. But it's there. It's immediate feedback in the sense that if I'm off base or if I'm not owning some state of mind or I'm bringing some really grumpy state of mind into the interaction with them, like they know it. They're like, you don't feel great about yourself right now. Why should I feel really great about you? Or, you know, it's, you know, they demand really the best of us in order to really have a good relationship with them, you know, harmonious. And it's a really wonderful attunement practice. Probably three totally like out of left field answers, but they're the three cornerstones for me.
That's absolutely perfect. That you brought me back many years when we had horses at home, and when you spoke about that brought me with the, I was a small kid, so I was small.
Yeah.
When I was approaching the horses, they were always trying to smell and through the nose, and you approach your edge close to their nose, and they don't move, and they smell slowly, and it's warm, and you feel something is happening. And that brought that memory to my mind instantly. That's very funny.
Yeah. Well, it's such a, well, I'm really glad you brought up that memory, because I mean, I think if the horse industry really needed to convert people into the horse industry, all you need is to just have a horse blowing on your face or your hand or something. And there's something really potent about that. You're hooked. Me anyway. Totally
hooked, yeah. Oh yes. That's funny. So let's take a look at what will happen in the future. Let's take our crystal ball. How do you see the landscape of leadership coaching and organizational development, all those things changing during the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah. I think the trajectory of the last 5 years has been important, just to look back a little bit, because it put the emphasis on the importance of leadership development within any startup or any organization. I sense that's going to continue. You know, there was a time when it was a hard sell to get an executive coach or bring in L&D work, and now it's just it's kind of a norm, especially kind of in companies like startup companies that have been funded, and other organizations too, and in other verticals and other industries, not just tech, which is really great to see, because, you know, now that these like coaching and L&D are part of, you know, budgets and budgeting, they're seeing the impact as well, I think, because the payoff of those line items are so great for the individuals and the teams and then the organization and business as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, I suspect that will continue. The thing is, like, work is a very people-y place. Work is a very human place, right? I really don't think AI is going to shift that too much. I mean, there are still going to be humans doing human work, and humans need tending to, and those humans that are working in relational spaces need tending to, whether it's their teammates or their customers or the service that they're providing. So, I mean, I would hope, I guess, if I look into that crystal ball, it's that the landscape of L&D or the landscape of leadership coaching will just become more human, more and more human.
I love it. And you guessed that. My question was also connected with AI, because it seems everything is related to AI nowadays.
I know, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love your answer. That's reassuring. I've heard a lot of people thinking they will solve everything with a little bit of AI. And I'm pretty sure a lot of interesting problem can be solved. But I would love us to use the time that we gain to engage in more meaningful relationship.
Yeah, well said.
Let's hope for that.
Well said.
So What's next for Reboot? Any exciting projects or initiative you can share with us?
We've kind of got a lot of ideas in the hopper, but I think the big and easily ready to share tidbit is Jerry's second book launches tomorrow. So you can find it on bookshelves everywhere. For real, not just on pre-order. So we're excited. We're excited to see how that emerges tomorrow. We were kind of aiming for some bestseller lists with a lot of pre-sale efforts, but the book industry is a really crazy space. So we'll see what happens. But other than that, I just say watch this space carefully for any projects and expansions. But you can count on us to continue to provide meaningful and helpful content as a corollary to the services we provide. And the newsletter, our newsletter is always a great place to dive into what we're currently doing and kind of what's coming up in the next months and what might be emerging, in the next year or so.
I definitely will put links in the companion blog post to make sure that people can find those resources and the newsletter and so on. And the book, of course. That's cool. That reminds me that I did not pre-order. I will. So that's good. I will order now. So thank you very much for joining, Ali. That was really fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.